And hello, welcome to a new episode of Medieval Me. We've kind of been on a little bit of a hiatus since last fall. Our host, Wendy Jordan, is back in the studio here in the United States with us. And she's been kind of, instead of speaking English, she's been speaking Spanish a little bit lately. But we're happy to have her back. Wendy, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back. I know it's been quite a while.
It's been quite a while, but we are hoping to get back on a regular schedule now that things have kind of settled down for you. You've been teaching Espanol.
Yeah. Just to, you know, just something different, trying to get going on different stuff.
Well, and we know that you've also doing a couple of other works. I know you're been put in for the lead historian on a grant with Northeastern State University in Oklahoma, and also a couple of other projects. So we're really proud of you and really happy for you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much. Just trying to stay busy, busy, busy.
But let's get back to the medieval time period,
which is my favorite.
So. Yes, that's your kind of your specialty. And today we're going to talk about one that a lot of people probably know a lot about. Yes. From stories of Robin Hood.
Yes. So hopefully the hiatus is kind of worth it because we come back strong with a really interesting, well-known figure.
Come back with a good one. Richard the Lionheart.
Yep. That's one that I'm sure is familiar to a lot of people, especially people who are familiar with the Robin Hood legend, because Richard, of course, is good King Richard, as opposed to his brother John, who is depicted as the bad King John in the movie Robin Hood and the Legend of Robin Hood. So even though Richard's not a central figure in Robin Hood, he is quite widely heard about for those that are familiar with that tale.
So now I know that now supposedly to the tale, both the Robin Hood movie and the Disney cartoon, Richard went off on the Crusades and his brother John tried to rule in his stead, but didn't do very well. Is that how the story actually went?
Well, in the Robin Hood story, that is how the Robin Hood story does go, pretty much. The story kind of being that Richard goes off on crusade because despite being king, he really was a warrior first, and he was barely in England because he was fighting all the time. So he actually left the seat of power in the hands of his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine, who our last episode was about, who I love, my favorite, because she ruled in his stead. He left it with her. But John kept trying to kind of uprise and uprise and uprise, and Eleanor basically had to keep trying to squash him down while Richard was gone. So yes, that is kind of where it comes from.
So there is a basis of truth in the Robin Hood story.
Yes.
Yeah. But now, what's really interesting about Richard, and I'm sure you'll talk a little bit about this, he was known as Richard the Lionheart, basically because of his reputation as a great military
bravery leader. Yeah. Le Coeur de Lion, which, I mean, I didn't take French, so I don't speak French. So it's probably bad pronunciation, but Heart of the Lion, Coeur de Lion.
But yeah, but the fact that it was French, it's kind of interesting there because he was king of England, but he had a lot of ties to France, didn't he?
I would say he was more French than English in reality. You know, I guess there's no place to start like the beginning. And in doing so, it is kind of a rehash a little bit of Eleanor, because that is his mother. So, and she outlived him. So in talking about her life, it encompasses the entire life of Richard. But if you recall from the last episode way long ago, Eleanor of Aquitaine was an extremely wealthy woman of power in France. She was married to the King of France, divorced him, married Henry II of England, and had children by him, the second of those children, the second boy being Richard. So he's half French on his mother's side and half English on his father's side, even though his father had ties to France too, very, very intermixed. So he was born in England. However, after his parents separated, started not getting along, and his mom kind of moved back and spent a lot of her time back in France where she was from, he went with her. It was very widely publicized among historians and contemporaries that Richard was probably Eleanor's favorite son. So kind of his and hers kids. John was the favorite son of Henry, and Richard was the favorite son of Eleanor. And so Richard spent most of his childhood after his parents kind of were on the outs with each other with his mom in France. Probably spoke French more than English, and probably spoke French better than English as well.
So. Well, that's really interesting. So Now, his father, I guess, was actually Henry.
Yes, Henry the Second. Yes.
His father was Henry the Second of England. And then, and his mother, of course,
Eleanor.
Was Eleanor. But what's really interesting, though, is how exactly did he wind up becoming King of England?
Yes. So you probably heard me mention he's the second son. Mm-hmm. You know, heir and a spare. He was the spare. And then there were two other brothers. So the oldest one, Henry the Young King, he died. And so that left Richard to be the heir. One of the other brothers, Jeff, he died as well. So it came down to Richard and John that were left. The four boys, they got into a scuffle with their father. They kind of rebelled from him a little bit on their mother's influence because of all the family drama. She was angry at Henry for his affairs. And so she kind of stirred the boys up to try and say, like, well, take some power and do some stuff. You know, your dad's getting old and you can do it better. She kind of riled them up into a little bit of a rebellion. Henry obviously wasn't very pleased about this. And so he wasn't in the best place with Richard. But after the death of the older boy, Henry the Young, it kind of left him in a spot where Richard was the eldest. And so now it was going to go to Richard. I remember reading one account in college. I can't remember which one it was, but there might have been some attempt from Henry to circumvent the order of lineage and give it straight to John, the youngest son. But that's not verified. And even if he did try that, it ended up not working out because by order of birth, Richard was next and therefore he was heir.
So as far as sibling rivalries, the Robin Hood story, I keep going back to that one. There, Richard was gone and John had a lot of, it seemed like disdain for his older brother, Richard. Was it really that way?
I would say so. I think a lot of it, so one thing you have to know is John was Richard's younger brother, but he was Richard's much younger brother. So there was not just a little bit of an age gap. There was a big age gap. You would almost say in today's terminology, John, it was almost like the surprise because he was so much younger. And so there was just really this big, you know, shift and this big between them where they just weren't really close in age, where they didn't really grow up together because, you know, he spent all the time with dad in England, or John spent all the time with dad in England, and Richard spent all his time in France with mom. The parents didn't get along. And so it just kind of made growing up in childhood a little bit hard and a little bit forced. And John didn't really get anything because he was so much younger and he had all these older brothers that he's called John Lachlan for a reason. John lacked land. He didn't have lands. And so it just was kind of him being like, well, I want stuff, and thinking that he had opportunity and means to get it. So,
well, I think that's kind of interesting. So you kind of mentioned something that was a little bit interesting there. So John spent a lot of time in England with his mm-hmm. father, Henry, mm-hmm. while Richard spent a lot of time in France with Eleanor. Now, Richard, even though he was king of England, he was also Duke of Aquitaine.
Yeah, so he got his mother's titles, obviously, and she, like I said before, was the richest woman in France and had a lot of lands and had a lot of titles there. And because he'd grown up there, he was more comfortable there. So even though he spent the majority of his time as king crusading and fighting, when he wasn't crusading and fighting, he was also in France a lot. Spoiler alert, he's king for 9 years between coronation and death. He spent 6 months or less of that, actually, in England.
So it's kind of interesting. I wonder how he could actually rule England if he wasn't actually there.
I mean, it was mostly done through his mother in name. And he also had trust in his wife. So he just had people ruling in his place, people he trusted, you know, managing from afar. So.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So he was married.
He was married.
And
very interesting stories with his relationships that we'll definitely get into.
All right. So hopefully we'll hear a little bit more about those. Mm-hmm. But so where did this leave John? Was he still in England during this time?
Yes. Yes.
And did he try to overrule his brother often?
He did.
He did.
He did a lot. Like I said, Eleanor usually had to play whack-a-mole to keep John down. John had allies, though, people who weren't necessarily the biggest fans of Richard. One in particular, very noteworthy person who we'll get into, Philip of France. And that was kind of John's biggest ally. And that's why John seemed to think he had means, motive, and opportunity to try and usurp a few times.
All right. Well, let's take a short break. And whenever we come back, we're going to learn some more about King Richard the Lionheart. Stay with us. Okay, and welcome back. And for this segment, we are going to kind of get into some of Richard's love life.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about his relationships.
Kind of his background, where he was coming from, a general overview, who his parents. Talking about his relationships, because I think that played more of a role shaping his life than in his earlier life before we talk about him on Crusade. So Richard, obviously, he got a betrothal quite early. This, again, has to do with the very family drama around the monarchies of England and France. And I'm just going to try and walk everybody through this as I go along. So if you recall, Eleanor of Aquitaine was married previously to the King of France, correct? You
remember that? That's correct, yes.
Divorced him, married Henry. He remarried, obviously, so that he could have his own spouse and his own children and his own heirs. So even though Eleanor and her first husband got divorced, their children were very much intertwined, because one daughter of the King of France and his second wife became engaged to and married to Henry the Young, which was the first child of Eleanor and Henry II. And they had another daughter named Alice, who was betrothed to Richard. So basically is, you know, these exes, Eleanor and Louis, and their children ended up becoming contracted together as a means to unite England and France. Okay.
All right.
So is that keeping up a little bit?
A little bit. I do
awkward
have,
a little bit.
It is a little awkward. Now, you said he was betrothed.
Yeah.
And he was 9?
Yeah. Yeah. Roughly 9 whenever he got betrothed. If you think that's crazy, his older brother, Henry the Young King, mm-hmm. who I mentioned before, he was married at 3 years old.
3 years old?
Married. They actually were married at 3. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, obviously they waited until they were old enough to consummate the marriage, but they actually were married at 3.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You couldn't even...
Yeah, yeah.
Not wouldn't even be possible at that point.
3, yeah.
But, I mean, what did they do? Just live with their parents in separate castles or whatever?
No, the girls moved in. The girls moved in with their future in-laws, essentially. They lived in Eleanor's kind of accommodation and rooms. Especially the first one, the one who's married at 3, is because she was expected to be the actual queen because she was married to the older son. So she was thought to someday be the queen. So she was basically raised by Eleanor instead.
Wow.
Yeah.
But Richard was betrothed at 9 years old.
He was betrothed.
It was actually the daughter of a French king?
Yeah, the French king. Eleanor's ex.
Okay.
Yeah. His betrothed's name was Alice. She was a princess, the daughter of the French King Louis, who was Eleanor's ex. Richard also had a very, very big relationship, very close relationship with the son of the King of France. So his betrothed's older brother, Philip, who was the heir to the French throne, he had a very, very intense relationship with him. So betrothed to Alice, who's the daughter of the French king, but has a very, very intense relationship with the son of the French king, the heir to the French throne, Philip.
Now, I think it's really interesting. I kind of read somewhere before in other history websites, where Henry actually tricked Louis VII, the French king, into handing over his daughter, promising to marry Richard.
Kind of. So one thing is, the French king, one he wasn't happy about was the marriage of his older daughter at such a young age, because he thought they were just getting betrothed, but Henry went ahead and married them. Now, this is not Richard's betrothed. This is the older daughter that I mentioned.
Okay.
But another thing, so Richard's engaged to Alice at 9, but obviously they grow up. As they grow up and they become teenagers, Alice started an affair with Henry II, with Richard's father. So her fiance's father.
So with the king.
Yes.
So he kind of basically...
He was essentially sleeping with his son's fiance.
And used her as his mistress.
Yes. Now, you can't really put blame on that on her, obviously.
No,
because what is she supposed to say to the king of this country and her future father-in-law?
Right.
He definitely abused his position, as tended to happen a bit. Women, even though there were strong women, just look at Eleanor, they were still a little bit of a commodity and a little bit not treated wonderfully. So
definitely
I can't
the medieval ages, different mindset than what we have in the 21st century,
bit,
isn't it?
Yeah. So I can't really put the blame on Alice for that. But no matter what, it did strain relationships. Obviously, Eleanor wasn't pleased. Her husband's over here having an affair with this young thing. Eleanor was older than Henry to begin with. So, you know, I feel like it would have really hurt her quite a bit because she's already older than her husband. And now her husband's seeing a much younger woman. Would have just thought of it as an insult, essentially. So it did create quite a bit of drama in that regard. Like I said, this is a soap opera. This is total soap opera.
You could make a movie about this.
They have made movies about this.
Right.
The other thing is Alice is having the affair with Richard's father, Henry II. There's a question about what Richard's relationship was like with Philip, the prince of France,
really?
The crown prince of France, his fiance's older brother.
So you saying maybe it was a little bit more than just friends ruling lands and kingdoms?
Nothing is provable. Nothing is completely obvious. I've spoken to historians who fall kind of on both sides of that debate.
Mm-hmm.
I think more people now are really looking at that with a more critical lens and a more critical mindset, and they're being a little bit more open to what that might mean. But there is definitely some indication, some kind of evidence that at least it's very possible that Richard had some kind of romantic relationship with Philip, the crown prince of France, when they were younger.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, you really don't think about kings being that way, but nothing says that they couldn't have been.
Yeah. Jumping ahead several episodes, there are a couple of kings of England and other places in Europe that we know of for sure. Had homosexual relationships. The one with Richard is a little more of a toss-up because later on in his life, Richard did father an illegitimate child. So he did have women in his life as well in order to have a child that he acknowledged as his illegitimate one. But people didn't really talk about this. The kings of England, who it's a little bit more obvious, there tend to be kings with not quite a reputation, you know, like this is, you know, the Kill de Lion, the heart of the lion. This is the brave crusader going out on Christian cause. Are we really going to write about him in this way? So it's a little more questionable about whether or not that's what is intended by how they wrote about Philip and Richard's relationship. But it is at least very possible. And even if they weren't romantic, then they were at least very much best friends.
Almost like he would rather have a romance than a romance.
Yeah. Like there's writings of them having slept in the same bed when they were younger. Whether or not that's like romantic or not, it at least shows a deep level of trust and a deep level of intimacy on some level, even if it's not in that level. But so there is some evidence for it. And their falling out later in life kind of came off more like a lover's quarrel.
Really?
A bit. So,
well, now I know there is the way the history goes that whenever Richard succeeded his father, he was only 31, which was way back in the year 1189, and he kind of had an obligation to produce an heir for the kingdom in order to avoid kind of the chaos.
Right.
But he was unwilling to get married and actually do that.
That's another reason people kind of look at the potential that maybe he had, you know, these romantic attachments to men. Like I said, he did have an illegitimate child that he acknowledged. So he would have obviously had to have had a relationship with a woman, but he never had children with his wife. He didn't really seem to spend that much time with his wife romantically. They didn't dislike each other, but they came off like as friends as opposed to a romantic couple. So that's one thing. The not having children is another. The not really, you know, not really seeing the need to have children almost because he didn't spend really any time with his wife.
So looking ahead a little bit though, whenever he actually died, even though he had an illegitimate child, he was considered childless, and that's why John succeeded to the throne. Yeah,
exactly, because he didn't have a child with a wife. So
very interesting.
That's another reason that people might point out that maybe he had some romantic inclinations that weren't conducive to producing children. So
wow. Okay. Before we take another break and we go into the Crusades, I'm just kind of curious. I keep going back to the Robin Hood story because that's just something that's always intrigued me. And I really like that mm-hmm. story. Was there really a character named Robin Hood and did Richard actually meet him?
No. Robin Hood is a legend. There is no factual hard evidence that the story of Robin Hood, as you and I have heard it, actually occurred. There's nothing like that. It is a legend. Legends are built on, pieces of truth and fun stories mm-hmm. and little nuggets that get in people's heads and local legends. But the Robin Hood that you and I know from movies and TV, that is not true.
So what about this endearing legend of Good King Richard that is in the Robin Hood movies? How did that come about?
I think that came about just because people hated John so much.
Really?
Because John was not a pleasant character. There's a reason there's only been one King John in England, and that's the only one. We've had multiple Williams, we have multiple Charles, multiple James, multiple Henrys, yada, 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 but there's only ever been one John, and there is kind of a little bit of a reason for that, because that one was so bad, no one really wants to repeat that.
Well, did he, so I'm kind of just kind of going back to that a little bit. John really was that bad.
He really was that bad.
He really was that bad.
Yes. I have quotes about John, but I'm saving them for his episode. So yeah, yes, he was. He was that bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that why Richard was looked at as being the good king?
I think that's part of it. That, and then, he spent, even though he wasn't in England, he spent so much time crusading the Christian cause. He was such a warrior that it was almost like a legendary figure in the minds of his people in England, whom he hardly ever saw because he was only there 6 months out of the 9 years he was king.
Wow. Totally fascinating.
Yeah. But anyway, I will finish it up. We kind of talked about his relationships. He didn't marry Alice. That got called off. After he became king, his mother, Eleanor, didn't like Alice because she'd been having the affair with her husband. So she decided, nope, we're not going to do this, and arranged for him to marry a woman named Berengaria of Navarre. Navarre is in Spain. She was the relative of Sancho the 10th, I believe, of Spain. And he ended up marrying her. So instead of marrying Alice, the French princess who had had an affair with his father and was the little sister of his best friend, maybe lover, he married a Spanish princess.
Wow. So he had England, France, and Spain lands all kind of tied in here.
Yeah. Yep. And Sancho was also friends with Richard, not in the same kind of intense closeness as Philip had been, but he was also friends with Richard.
Very interesting. So. All right. Well, let's take another short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about
Richard
wars
on Crusade.
And the Crusades. Mm-hmm. Stay with us. And welcome back for the third segment. We're here with our host of Medieval Me, the lovely and talented and historical Wendy Jordan. And we're talking about Richard, the good king, Richard the Lionheart. And we're going to talk, we've talked a little bit about his personal life, his romantic life. Now we're going to talk about his war life. Apparently he was quite the crusader.
Led the Third Crusades. Absolutely. So Richard becomes king, and he kind of had already had plans to go crusading. Richard's prowess really was in battle. He was a very strong military leader. There's lots of stories of him in battle. He actually fought with his men. He was very, very well equipped in military dealings and topics. So he spent a lot of time on crusade. Most of the time that he was King of England was on the Third Crusade. That was the big happening whenever he became king and was coronated, and he'd kind of already planned on going. So that's where he went. That's where he set off to. He was actually on crusade when he got married.
Wow.
So he becomes king. He and his mom together, they decide we're going to marry Berengaria of Navarre. Like I mentioned, she's from Spain. And Eleanor kind of says, okay, well, I'll go pick her up and I'll bring her out to you on crusade. I'll send her your way. So you can go ahead and get going. And so he actually already went and he had fought on Cyprus. He landed on Cyprus and he fought. There's stories of him like heroically being the first one off the boats and everything. Whether that's true, it might be, it might not be. Most times kings wouldn't be the first one off the boat because you don't want them to be the first one shot with an arrow.
Wow. Yes. But, well, I kind of wondered about that because I had read different stories where it said that he was actually the first one off the boat.
I've seen a lot of those too. And it's possible. Definitely leading his men into charge would be a wondrous sight to see for the crusaders. So,
right.
So that's where he and his wife actually met up, was because she was kind of around Cyprus and that's when he took the island. So that's where they were married. So you can kind of see that crusading really was his important thought. He didn't wait around for anything. He didn't wait around to get married. He didn't wait around for any of it. He just was like, I'll go ahead and get going and it'll catch up to me. So
really interesting. So you kind of think about crusades. Did he actually go into the Holy Land in Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm. So he was never quite able to get Jerusalem. To get into the Third Crusade, it's been a long time. It's been several generations since the First Crusade. Now, the First Crusade was highly successful for the Western Europeans, for the Christian cause against the Muslims. That's a whole other thing. But anyway, it had been really successful. And there'd been lots of stories of the heroism of, you know, these crusading Christians and except yada, yada, yada. And so everyone kind of grew up in that vein, like, I'm going to be that heroic. It's kind of like today you hear the, you know, people grow up with the stories of heroism from World War I and World War II. And so when the opportunity arises, a lot of people think, you know, I'll go be that hero. So the same kind of thing has happened now. Another one of my favorite figures from the Third Crusade, and one who is very back and forth playing a chess match with Richard, is Salah ad-Din, or Saladin is the westernized version. He is the leader of the Saracen or the Islamic cause on the Third Crusade. And he is an enigmatic figure on his own accord. He's wonderful. Like I said, he plays this chess match with Richard of being very evenly matched on both sides. Hmm. But in quick summary, after the First Crusade, Jerusalem was in the hands of the Christians, not the Muslims. Saladin was offended greatly. There was an offense on a person of his relation. So either his wife, or either his sister or his mother, was gravely injured by some Christian leaders. And it kind of just inspired him to say enough's enough. And he started building a cause for the Muslim cause. And he ended up retaking Jerusalem. And that's kind of what the Third Crusade was launched on about, was like, well, the Muslims have it again, so we need to go get it back. And Richard was kind of the leader of that cause. So that's the background to the Third Crusade. A lot more detail on it and a lot more on Saladin, who I have an episode planned for because he's his own figure. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where they're coming from. So Richard's going to go with all of his troops. Philip is also going to go. This is the Philip who has now become king of France. It was the boy that he was best friends with, maybe infatuated with, we don't know for certain. And then also another leader from what is modern day Germany. They were all going to go together. It was on this crusade that Richard and Philip fell out heavily. First of all, there was the issue that Richard didn't marry Philip's sister. So instead of his sister becoming the queen consort of England, she has now been pushed to the side and he's marrying someone else. So it was a big insult for Philip. They didn't agree on military tactics completely. They got into it a bit, and just something about it really set him off, and it really caused them to have a really big falling out. Again, almost like a lover's quarrel.
So now was this before or after he went to Cyprus?
Oh, the falling out with Philip, I believe it was around the same time because they didn't quite agree on the plans at that time.
I'm just kind of curious because...
on Cyprus?
Yeah. He kind of went back there, but I guess he went back there eventually after the Holy Land.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd been back there. But Philip was so offended by Richard that he actually turned around and went home and then became an aide to John while John was trying to usurp
England. So boy, kind of talk about going to the other.
Yeah. Again, that's like side, something. So something's really bad happened between the pair of them.
Well, from what I understand, it was actually whenever he went back to Cyprus that was whenever he finally relented and got married.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he landed on Cyprus and it was kind of because that
you'd kind of talked about.
Like,
that
yeah, you think
there.
Of it. It's in, you know, you're on the boat heading over to the Holy Land. You hit Cyprus. It's that nice island right there. And yeah, so they do that. But Richard, he has many successes. He gets lots of places really close to the Holy Land, close to Jerusalem, but Jerusalem just always evaded him. He couldn't quite get Jerusalem. And I'm very firmly in the camp that had the Saracens, which is another word for the Muslim cause, been led by anyone other than Saladin, Richard probably would have won. Mm-hmm. And if the Christians had been behind anyone other than Richard, Saladin probably would have won, because both were very well-versed in what they were doing, and they were both very good at what they did. So
it just kind of came to a draw, I guess.
Yeah, they couldn't, what's the chess term for it? When they can't, stalemate, is that it? They couldn't quite get each other. So Richard never got Jerusalem. So a lot of people say the Third Crusade was a failure because what the initial cause for it didn't succeed, but he did get some other places reclaimed in the name of the Christian cause. He had several victories, Jaffa, Acre, lots of good battles, lots of good indications. One story, this is more of a Saladin story than a Richard story, but there's one story that while Richard was fighting in a battle, he became unseated from his horse, and Saladin called a retreat of his troops until Richard could get a new horse because it was bad form to strike a leader while he was down.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You would think they would have taken advantage of it.
You would think. Again, that's probably more for a Saladin-centric episode, but it's one of my favorites from the Third Crusade because it just shows like the good sport, you know, the good sportsmanship, the rules of war, the etiquette of war that's just being adhered to, at least definitely on Saladin's side. And it's just one of those ones that you don't hear about as much.
So I guess after the Crusade, Richard did not go back to England and.
Correct. So
see Maid Marian, Mary and all of that stuff.
No, my goodness. Robin Hood. So Saladin and Richard, they've been kind of fighting. Richard can't quite get his hot hands on Jerusalem. Saladin keeps evading him. So what they end up doing, and both of them kind of, they've got other things going on. Saladin's health isn't in the best spot. Richard's, you know, a little weary and a little battle strained and tired. And he's dealing with John, who's trying to take over his kingdom back home. And so they're both just like, they actually come to a treaty and an agreement where they decide they're going to have an armistice, essentially, like they're going to have a peace treaty for 3 years. And Richard says, I'm going to go take care of my stuff. You can stay here and recoup, but I'm coming back in 3 years to try and do this again, And Saladin wishes him luck and says that if he was ever going to lose, he would hope he'd lose to Richard.
Wow.
So, you know, a very good camaraderie mm-hmm. among these two rivals, like a token of esteem between the two as seeing the other as almost an equal in this cause. But the two would never meet again. Saladin died not long after this treaty arrangement took place. Richard was on his way back to England. So he sent his wife, Berengaria, also his sister, Joan. They took a separate vessel from him. Again, this is an instance of seeing how Richard didn't spend that much time with his wife. So they took a separate vessel, and the vessel Richard was on, and then his traveling back up through Austria, he ended up being held for ransom.
You mean he got trapped?
He got trapped and he got held for ransom. So
why did he stop in Austria?
He was going up.
Going up.
Yeah. Basically. So he got trapped. He got stuck there. His wife, Berengaria, she secured safe passage for herself and her sister-in-law, Richard's sister Joan, by going through her home country of Navarre. And so she was safe. Richard was being held for ransom for an obscene amount of money, like two or three times more than the crown.
Well, I'm kind of curious. I mean, did they not have his warriors? And I mean, wouldn't they have just fought?
I mean, they did, but then he also just got caught. It was one of the other leaders from the Third Crusade that he'd previously gotten into a spat with while they were on crusade. Richard was crossing through his land, and he got intercepted, and they said, "We are going to ransom you for some money."
So basically, he got in a spat with somebody and then just thought, well, that's so-and-so's land. I'll just kind of walk on through. And
yeah. And so he gets held for this obscene amount of ransom money. And his mother, Eleanor, I mentioned this in her episode. She's in her, oh goodness, mid to late 60s at this point. But she went around and she personally gathered the ransom money for him from all the royalty and landholders and aristocrats in England. She went around and got that ransom money. You know, old woman who's going to get her baby because.
But it actually took her a couple of years.
Because it takes so much time just to travel and logistics, word to get places takes weeks, you know, and that's quick. Mm-hmm. Snail mail, definitely. So.
I guess so.
But she does secure the ransom. He does get ransomed. But again, so that's another instance of him not being in England and he's not there. His wife stays in France most of the time. He goes over to England for a bit. He isn't there very long, and he kind of tries to deal with John, but then he has to go defend lands in France because, again, he has had this humongous falling out with Philip, who is now the king of France. He has lands in France due to his mother that he's gotten from her because he inherited her titles upon, you know, the death of his father and ascent, blah, 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 blah.
So his wife is living in France. He has lands in France, but the king of France is his ex-friend,
maybe more. So now he's
battling him.
Yeah. So he is actually in France when he dies in battle. I don't think he'd rather go out any other way. That's exactly how he would have wanted to go. I can't pronounce it because it's French, but it was in March 1199. He was sieging the castle of Chalus-Chambrol. I am so sorry because I do not speak French at all. And he was shot in the shoulder with a crossbow bolt, and the wound turned to gangrene, and it eventually did kill him on April 6th, 1199. And so that is how he died, like he lived, the Coeur de Lion, the fighting, brave warrior king, and not in England.
It's kind of a sad end for the Lionheart King.
It is sad, but I also, like I said, I can't think of him wanting to go out any other way. He spent so much of the time he was king fighting, and he fought before he was king, and that seems to be where he placed all his emphasis. I don't think he would have wanted to go out any other way, even though it does seem a little ill-befitting that he gets taken out by a gangrene infection. But.
Now, I understand he was only 41 years old.
Very young, yeah.
So he was a young king. And then it passed on to his brother, John.
Then it went to John. Outlived by his mother, like I said, because she was in her 80s when she passed. And outlived by his wife. She continued to live in France. She lived very quietly, kind of spent most of her time around abbeys and nunneries. And she never remarried. She never had any children of her own. She got into several spats with John because... widows of kings are entitled to a yearly allowance, like a pension, mm-hmm. and John wouldn't pay her because he was bad with finances, so she'd have to get into spats with him all the time about that. But then she lived the rest of her life quietly as well and never had any more children.
Well, one thing interesting too, and I did read about this, the archer that hit King Richard that eventually caused his death.
Richard pardoned him,
called him to his bedside as he was dying, actually, and gave him 100 shillings and set him free.
Mm-hmm. But said good form.
It didn't end well for the archer anyway, did it? No, from what I understand, despite the king's pardon, he was literally flayed alive and then hanged. Now, was that done by the French king or was that done by the other British soldiers?
I think it was just a big mix of mobbery and not just, good. I mean, because they're like, this is our king, we're gonna avenge him, and yeah, not nice. But that was the end of Le Coeur de Lion, the heart of the lion.
Very interesting. Do you think he was the favored king of the medieval times?
One of the most famous for certain. It's hard to judge these things because there's so many lenses you could look at. He was never in England to rule. You know, he wasn't a great statesman. what's his tax policy? You know, like, mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't all, so it depends on the lens you're looking at. As far as like fame goes, as far as fighting, definitely, as far as bravery, definitely. When he's being compared to his younger brother, who is probably one of, if the not most despised king in British history, especially of the time period, it's just a little bit interesting on how you would rate that. But he definitely is one of the most well-regarded and well-known.
So it's really interesting now talk about his death. Let's just chat for a second as we close out on his burial. He was King of England, but he's actually buried in France.
He's in France. Yes. He's by his mom. Of course, ever the mama's boy. He's in France. He's by his mom. Like I said at the beginning, he was more French than English. He spoke French more than English. A lot of people are fairly certain based on how he grew up, where he would have grown up and writings that he was more fluent in French than English. So,
wow. Very interesting. Now, I know that there's actually pictures of his burial site, and it looks pretty authentic as far as his looks. Is that how we know what he looked like pretty close?
It's an effigy, so it's probably a pretty decent interpretation, but you'd never know for certain because obviously there wasn't...
Well, there wasn't photographs or anything to take back then. It's not like he had a military union card or anything of that sort.
Yeah, I think I'll just end... So we kind of talked about him and just given this nice general introduction. Again, this isn't really a deep dive for people who are experts in the subject. I'm trying to just create like general knowledge kind of pieces. So I think I'll just kind of end this general knowledge concept on cultural depictions of Richard in pop culture and in media. So obviously Robin Hood, the Robin Hood legend, he's in that. Ivanhoe, which is a very popular novel. English majors, English people will really know that one. He is involved there. There are other books about him. There's obviously a lot of nonfiction biographies about him. As far as film goes, some interesting ones are different versions of Robin Hood. The silent film Robin Hood from 1912 he is in. Also a different silent Robin Hood from 1913. He's also in a film adaptation of Ivanhoe from 1913. That was a silent film. He was played by Henry Wilcoxon in Cecil B. DeMille's The Crusades from 1935. He was played by Ian Hunter in 1938's version of Robin Hood, in which Errol Flynn played Robin. He's in, let me see, where is it? All these ones. This was the one that I think is most interesting and the one of the greatest, you know, interpretations is a young Anthony Hopkins played him in Lion Winter. Yeah. A young Anthony Hopkins pre all of his big movies played Richard in The Lion in Winter from 1968. In that movie, Katharine Hepburn plays Eleanor of Aquitaine, his mother.
So two kind of big names.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that for that role, Anthony Hopkins was nominated for BAFTA for Best Supporting Actor, which is the British Film and Television Awards. It's the Oscars of Britain.
Wow.
So
very interesting.
That's the big one. He was played by Sean Connery at the end of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, obviously, right. 1991. He was in a Russian film. They made a Russian film based on Richard Lionheart that he is in. He is played by Patrick Stewart in Mel Brooks' Robin Hood Men in Tights in 1993, starring Cary Elwes. He is played by Ian Glen at the end of Kingdom of Heaven. Ian Glen, people who don't know that name, that's a Game of Thrones actor.
Okay.
So there's that one. And that's all the film adaptations of him that I had.
So quite a character and quite a big legend to go with that character.
Mm-hmm. There's also statues of him around. There's a statue of him in London at Westminster. I've seen him, got a picture of it. It's great.
Okay.
There's also statues of him in Crusader lands, and there's actually a statue of him and Saladin together.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite a story. I'm anxious to hear the story of Saladin as well.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and be sure and join us next time on our next episode of Medieval Me.